From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Thursday edition, could the coronavirus and its economic fallout be pushing the U.S. and China into a new Cold War? New Jersey Congressman and human rights advocate Chris Smith joins me in just a moment. Continuing our look at churches that are thinking and acting outside the box, the four walls of the church, I'll be joined by my good friend, Pastor Jack Hibbs of Calvary Chapel, Chino Hills, California, where their church's reach has exploded since they've been unable to meet. And speaking of churches, the overreach of zealous officials is stirring up battles over religious liberty. We'll talk about that with Kansas State Representative Susan Humphreys, who was a part of a legislative coordinating council that overturned the governor's criminalization of church meetings. I'll also have some good news for you from San Bernardino, California, where the county has reversed course on prohibiting church drive-in services this weekend. And finally, Ken Blackwell, FRC Senior Fellow for Human Rights and Constitutional Governance, joins me with new information emerging about who is being impacted the most by the coronavirus. That and even a little bit more coming up on this edition of Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. By the way, let me remind you to download the new Stand Firm app. If you have friends that are unable to get the Washington Watch signal from one of the 350 stations that airs the program around the country, they can hear it on the Stand Firm app. Go to the App Store and download the new Stand Firm app. Not only can you listen to Washington Watch, but it gives you action items and precise direction on how your voice is heard in this republic of ours. All right, the COVID-19 has over 400,000 cases confirmed here in the United States. The virus has put a strain on health and economies, not only here in the United States, but all around the world. And it's brought tensions between the United States and China even higher. Is this pandemic pushing the U.S. and China closer to a Cold War? Joining me now to talk about it is Congressman Chris Smith. He represents the 4th Congressional District of New Jersey. He also serves on the Foreign Affairs Committee, the Congressional Human Rights Caucus, is a ranking member on the Congressional Executive Commission on China, and has been a longtime human rights activist, advocate, I should say. And we're glad to welcome him back to the program. Congressman, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Tony. Appreciate it. You have me on.
China's always been a bad actor in my book, and I would think you would agree. But this seems to be pushing us toward even, especially with President Trump and his leadership. Do you think we could be at a point where we're entering into a new phase of relationships with China that could be akin to a Cold War?
Rather than a Cold War, an honest relationship. Unfortunately, starting with Clinton, when he delinked human rights from our trade policy in 1994, May 26 to be exact, we have had such a dishonest relationship with a dictatorship, frankly, that horribly mistreats its people, no matter what their faith is. We know what's going on now with the Uyghurs, the Muslims, but the Christians have been crushed all throughout China. And, you know, the response from the United States and so many other countries, particularly Europe, has been tepid at best. There has been very little done. So we're, you know, now we're being affected directly by the malfeasance and the distortion policy, the propagandizing by the PRC, by China. And now our people in the United States, in my state, we have 51,000 cases of COVID-19. And throughout the country, we know how big it is. You just mentioned that, and around the world. That is because of gross dishonesty on the part of the government of China. It's all about the message. It's all about suppression of truth tellers. Tony, as you know, even the doctor, Dr. Li Wing Liang, he was muffled and threatened with arrest for bringing forth the information about COVID-19 before it even had a name. And that's how he was mistreated. An honest relationship is what we need. And we need the dictatorship, hopefully, God willing, to matriculate into a democracy sometime soon, because there are great people in China who deserve better.
Your Congressman, you mentioned the trade deal with Clinton. But going back even further than him, I was reading an article, Clyde Pressel Prestowitz, a former top trade negotiator in the Reagan administration, said, quote, the notion that free trade and globalization are going to tame China and make it more democratic, et cetera, I think this has shown that that's bull, is what he said. And I think I remember that claim that, oh, we just need to engage them economically and we'll change them from a standpoint of the human rights abuses that they were known for back then. I would suggest it's only gotten worse.
Tony, you're absolutely right. In every area of human rights and political rights, including freedom of speech, assembly, the whole draconian policy of forced abortion could never have occurred in a democracy with checks and balances, with accountability. And that notion, idealistic as it may have been, that if you trade more, they move in the right direction. No, the dictatorship becomes more empowered, has more access to capability for their military, and they have bought, I mean, they have one of the strongest armies, navies, marines on the planet. And so much of that technology is courtesy of the United States, and some from Europe. So, unfortunately, there was no linkage in our policies with trade to human rights. If we had that linkage, we could have empowered reformers inside of China. Instead, we stood with the dictatorships. And I mentioned Clinton because he made so much of the fact that George Herbert Walker Bush, and there was almost no trading relationship during those years, a big deal about, you know, that they had not stood strong on in terms of linkage of human rights. So he did it by executive order. 1 year later, he ripped it up and threw it into the trash. He did it on a Friday afternoon when almost nobody was around. I did a press conference on it and said, we just lost China. And it, you know, I'm not prophetic at all. It's like the nose of, you know, it couldn't be clearer that when you deal with the dictatorship that lies and deceives, and they do it, and they put undue pressure on the World Health Organization to carry their narrative, which is a false narrative, you end up with a pandemic that is killing so many people and making so many others very, very, very sick.
Right. Something that could have been avoided or at least minimized in terms of its effect. But I think now the world sees what you've been talking about, what those concerned about China have been warning about for years. But I want to touch. You mentioned the World Health Organization yesterday at the coronavirus task force press conference at the White House. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo spoke before the president. In fact, I talked to the Secretary of State today and brought this up because he was asked the question about, is it time for a change of leadership at the World Health Organization? Because it is clear that they were an accomplice for China, hiding the information about the human-to-human transference, the transmittal of this virus. Is it time that the United States address the World Health Organization?
Without a doubt. You know, Secretary Azar has spoken at the World Health Assemblies on a number of issues, including keep their mandate, and that is to protect people from disease. And unfortunately, the leadership there, Dr. Tedros from Ethiopia, got his job courtesy of the People's Republic of China. And he then parroted the false narrative put out by the Chinese government. He said there was no people-to-people transmission. They denied information that was coming from Taiwan that was more accurate because Taiwan is a persona non grata in the eyes of China, therefore in the eyes of WHO. And they were so slow in getting this information out. They weren't even for travel bans, which thankfully our president did. And he did it with great pushback from a lot of the China hands and by a lot of people who thought that it was a false move. We know that has saved lives now. But again, it was WHO. I think the World Health Organization has to become transparent, has to become accountable. And frankly, the world deserves a better WHO.
But, and Congressman, this is not the first time that we've had the WHO, even though there's that strong linkage to China. They've dropped the ball before.
Oh, they had. They dropped it on Ebola. Very, very slow out of the gate. They didn't want, the narrative there is that the information post-Ebola crisis in Sierra Leone and Liberia, is that they didn't want to get the other countries upset. You know, when you're talking about a pandemic or you're talking about a highly infectious disease, there are no politics. It is to protect people from that disease, whether it ends up in disability or death. That's their mandate. There can't be this kowtowing as they're doing to China right now.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Thursday afternoon. Congressman Chris Smith of New Jersey, my guest. Congressman, let me ask you this. I mean, the evidence of what happened is becoming clearer. I think it's beyond dispute that China delayed in getting the information. They denied it. They covered it up. And we lost precious time, which would have allowed not only the United States, but other countries, number one, to cut off the flight so that we weren't, allowing the infectious virus to come into our countries. But we could have ramped up certain protections as well. So that's pretty much beyond dispute at this point. What's the way forward when we talk about China and we see what kind of partnership, if you will, and that's I'm using that tongue in cheek because it's certainly not a partnership, but we've been so entangled with them in trade, and the economic aspects have driven almost everything we do with China. What's the way forward from here?
And on trade, brief before I get to that, they are an exporting economy. The Chinese economy lives or dies, does well or poorly based on exports. We're one of, if not their chief target for exporting products. So they will listen if we would be consistent and predictable and not wishy-washy about the importance of human rights and reforms. And I think right now the way forward is to absolutely demand a full accountability by the World Health Organization, emails and everything else. How did they get to take those positions? I mean, there was Dr. Tedros, the head of WHO, lauding China, and I read the press release at first time on WHO's website, saying how wonderful they're doing when they're doing just the opposite. They were suppressing the truth tellers, the journalists, the bloggers, and especially the doctors in Wuhan who are coming forward and speaking truth to power. They were crushed by the dictatorship. So we need to, I think, the Magnitsky Act, which provides some sanction on individuals, needs to be imposed. It's a visa ban and the inability to do any kind of business in the United States. We need to pick out the worst of the worst and people who are responsible for this virus and hold them to account. It's about accountability.
Well, we need to continue to pursue this, and this is something that I don't think we have a long time to talk about it, but certainly something we need to focus on as Congress comes back and act quickly while it is at the forefront of the world's attention. Congressman Chris Smith, thanks so much for joining us today. Have a wonderful Resurrection Weekend.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Thank you so much, Senator.
All right, Congressman Chris Smith of New Jersey. To find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. All right, another church, thinking and acting outside the box, the four walls of the church. What's happening? Well, they are exploding in their reach by being creative and faithful. Jack Hibbs is next. Is historic masculinity lost forever? Where can boys, young men, husbands, and fathers find a model of manhood, leadership, and strength in a culture of gender confusion? We need men to be men, tough with compassionate strength, bent toward justice without compromise, locking arms and standing. We need to be the men God created us to be and fight for all that is right, true, and just. This is Tony Perkins inviting you to join us at a Stand Courageous Men's Conference. To find out more, go to standcourageous.com. This conference is led by men who are seasoned, compassionate men who understand the issues of the day and will invest in you, helping you understand your role as a defender, a provider, an instructor, a battle buddy, and a chaplain, so that you can have the generational influence that God has designed you to have. Learn more at standcourageous.com. That's standcourageous.com.
Did you know that Planned Parenthood is the primary supplier of abortions in the U.S.? According to Planned Parenthood's most recent annual report, it committed over 345,000 abortions in fiscal year 2018. That means, on average, Planned Parenthood aborted 1,768 babies every single day in 2018. And while Planned Parenthood's report revealed an increase in abortions committed, many of the services they provide, such as breast exams and cancer screenings, have drastically decreased. FRC recently released its 2020 edition of The Real Planned Parenthood, Leading the Culture of Death. In this resource, you will find many facts revealing the truth, that Planned Parenthood is in the business of abortion, not healthcare. To access this resource and to find out more, go to frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts. That's frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts.
We can all benefit from a good lecture. They inform you and grow you. But sometimes you can't make it in person to every talk, seminar, or lecture you'd like to. Fortunately, Family Research Council now has a new podcast, so you won't miss out. FRC's new weekly podcast, called Lecture Me, was created to help inform and equip listeners on the biggest issues affecting our culture today. Each episode presents a lecture selected from the archives of the FRC Speaker Series. Our podcast features today's top thinkers who address important issues like religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture, all from a biblical worldview. Make sure to stay tuned after each lecture to hear FRC's thoughts on the content as they further discuss the topic at hand. The Lecture Me podcast is available wherever podcasts are found, or visit frc.org/podcasts.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. So good to have you with us. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Hey, let me again remind you to download the new Stand Firm app. It allows you to contact your members of Congress directly from your phone so you can encourage them to make the right decisions. Also, will enable you, no matter where you are in the world, to listen to Washington Watch. All right, the coronavirus has stifled everyday life around the country. It's changing the way we do life. Churches going into the second month in some jurisdictions not able to meet. But as we've been talking about each and every day, bringing you different churches that are thinking outside the box, the four walls of the church, thinking about new ways to minister, are actually seeing growth. You've heard them here on Washington Watch. Well, here's another one. Chino Hills, Calvary Chapel Chino Hills, our good friend Pastor Jack Hibbs, their numbers in terms of their viewers now watching online has literally exploded. Joining me now to talk about it is the senior pastor of Calvary Chapel Chino Hills, my good friend Pastor Jack Hibbs. Jack, welcome back.
Tony, thanks. it's an amazing time to be with you and to be a pastor of a church, I'll tell you that.
Well, we've been talking about this from the start. I mean, we've been having conversations, talking about different ways. We talked about, three or four weeks ago, we were talking about a drive-in service, and you were talking about doing that on Easter Sunday, and I'm going to get to that in a moment because the San Bernardino County, yesterday had said, or Tuesday night said, no, they reversed course yesterday, and you were a part of that. I want to talk about that, but first, you told me yesterday you're not going to do the drive-in service because you're reaching so many people. You don't want to mess up what God's doing.
Exactly that. And we did have that plan. You know that. We did talk about that. And so we were going to shut down the highway in front of us, which the city would happily cooperate with us. We were figured on getting maybe about 2,500 to maybe 3,000 cars, which could be done with our parking lot and the street out front, and we wound up pulling back from that, Tony, because you hit the nail on the head. For us, what we saw unexpectedly, that when this shutdown happened to us, we quickly scrambled to go online. Now, we did have an online presence beforehand, but nothing compared to what's happened in the last 3.5 weeks. And so for us now to host a drive-up service, at least for our church, would be a step backwards with what God has done here. I pray churches across America, if it fits for them, that they do a drive-up or drive-in service. But for us, God did something unexpected, and he continues to blow our minds to this hour.
I mean, let's talk a little bit about how, I mean, as you said, you've had a presence. I was out there at your church, a couple months ago, and we did a conversation for the Sunday morning service, and I don't know how many tens of thousands of views we got on that message, but yours is, I mean, it's literally exploded in the last 30 days.
Well, and what's really interesting is that the explosion of the teams gave me data right now, for example, just YouTube alone. We went from viewership of 50 to 60,000, which is a normal week for us. We're in the hundreds and hundreds of thousands. We have reached 9.5 million views now on YouTube. That doesn't include Facebook. Our Facebook now has reached 8.8 million, and the church's website has now reached 45,000 views. That also doesn't include, Tony, the fact that we air live on hischannel.com, which is a Christian live streaming network that's global. So it is absolutely unbelievable for us. We know that we serve a big God, but we underestimated what he was going to do at a time only the God of the Bible would seemingly have his church shut down, only to make it more effective by the airwaves and by broadcasting like we've never seen before in human history. There's more people. Dr. Ed Heinzen, who you know from Liberty University, mm-hmm. told me that he said, Jack, I'm driving right now in Lynchburg. I'm listening to the radio program. And he said, I'm convinced that you guys are reaching more people in one day across the nation and around the world with the gospel than Paul the Apostle ever did in his lifetime. Now, that's a radical statement, but yeah. It's absolutely true. It's true.
I want to unpack this for just a moment because it's not just your preaching on Sunday mornings that's going out on the social media channels. What your team did, and this is what I want to encourage other churches to look at, is you found a need and you went to meet it. I mean, you've established online prayer ministries at a time when people are very anxious and fearful. And so you've taken in, hundreds of prayer requests. You've got an elderly care ministry within your church community that's going, driving the elderly to appointments, providing food for them on their doorsteps and checking on them each day. With parents, with children at home, you've created content for them online. So you're doing this. So it's not just your Sunday morning service. You've been looking at what needs the church could meet that are outside the normal channels. And I think what it's created is this funnel that is driving people to also participate in the Sunday services.
You know, never would have believed if somebody would have said, you know what, you guys, you're going to be sequestered, but the ministry is going to explode. And Sunday and your midweek service is only going to be a small portion of what's going to be happening for your church into teaching and loving ministry, because it's happening every day. So you're exactly right. When this came down, we really converted. I'm not joking, Tony. We converted our sanctuary into just a really huge, gigantic studio. There's areas of our sanctuary where the chairs have been removed, and there are children's ministry sets that are now put up where kids are getting daily Bible reading from children's ministry personnel here at the church that are reading to the kids online Bible stories. There's youth ministries. They've got their own set. Junior high. On and on it goes. So there's been a great morphing.
Let me ask you, are you doing puppets? Are you doing puppets, Jack?
You know what? I need to check on the puppets. But if we do have puppets, they're spirit-filled puppets.
Okay. All right. Just checking. All right. Hey, we're not even going to get to what happened in San Bernardino County. I'm going to have to talk about that later with Travis Weber here. But your leadership, again, out there as a watchman pastor, helped reverse that policy. And we're going to talk about that later. Pastor Jack Hibbs, thanks so much for joining us. And keep standing there in Southern California.
Amen, brother. God bless you.
All right. Pastor Jack Hibbs, Calvary Chapel, Chino Hills, another pastor thinking and acting outside the box. All right, when we come back, we're going to be joined by Ken Blackwell. Senior Fellow for Human Rights and Constitutional Governance here at the Family Research Council. Don't go away.
What are you reading this spring? At FRCblog.com, we have timely and original commentary on the issues facing our culture today. Our blog is written by our policy experts, the Family Research Council team, and outside contributors. On our blog, you can read about a wide variety of topics, including religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture. Some of our most recent blog posts include, "To abandon the nuclear family ideal is to abandon being human." "Why does the abortion industry hate women?" "China uses coronavirus to oppress religious minorities," and many more. At Family Research Council, our mission is to advance faith, family, and freedom in the culture by helping you to live out your faith and to stand for truth. With our blog, we hope to help you do that. Stay informed and get the resources you need at FRCblog.com. Again, that's FRCblog.com.
The Fairness for All Act was recently introduced to the House of Representatives after the passage of the Equality Act. In response, FRC has come out with a new publication, The Unfairness of the Fairness for All Act. This act attempts to find a compromise between the First Amendment protection of religious freedom and the demands of the LGBT community. Despite having the best intentions, it is an ill-advised and poorly drafted bill that does not achieve its goal. If this act is passed into law, it would allow the federal government to impose a belief system and ideology about sexual behavior and identity on all Americans. The Fairness for All Act would negatively impact religious freedom, true equality, and the privacy and safety of women. To access this resource and to learn more, go to frc.org/fairnessforall. That's frc.org/fairnessforall.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us on this Thursday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, at T Perkins. All right. Again, let me remind you to download the new Stand Firm app. You can listen to Washington Watch anywhere in the, I was going to say country, but literally anywhere in the world. If you've got the app, go to the App Store, download it. Also has great functions for helping you contact your members of Congress, keeping you up to date on what is happening, giving you alerts and action steps. Go to the App Store and get the Stand Firm app. It's a real easy to do and makes your smartphone even smarter. All right, waiting on Ken Blackwell to join me. The coronavirus is hitting the entire country very hard, but one population is especially struggling. Black Americans are dying from COVID-19 at a higher rate. Now, why is that? Well, joining me to talk about it is FRC Senior Fellow for Human Rights and Constitutional Governance, Ken Blackwell. Ken, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. It's good to be with you, sir.
All right, Ken, why is the black community suffering at a greater rate when it comes to the coronavirus?
You know, the black community is no more susceptible to this disease than any other demographic, racial, or ethnic group. But they're being highly impacted when it comes to the number of deaths associated with it. Mm-hmm. And that's because there are more underlying conditions among the black community, like diabetes, overweight, and asthma. And that is what is making them more of a victim,
right,
in this situation.
Yeah, and I've talked about this on the program. My daughter, who is working with the COVID patients as an ER nurse, they're, of course, anecdotally, but as they see patients come through, you know, a higher BMI rating, you know, which overweight, underlying conditions on here, on the patients, that does contribute to the mortality rate. Now, let me ask you this, Ken, because I've seen some, I'm just beginning to see this news emerge. In fact, the White House acknowledged this week that, yes, they're beginning to see that this is a problem and they're looking into it. But then some reporters are suggesting that the federal government is concealing this information, somehow trying to make this into a racial issue. Do you see that going on?
Absolutely not. Look, let me just give you an example. About 10 days ago, I was walking. I try to do a 2 or 3 mile walk a day. And I saw eight young black men outside playing 4-on-4 basketball. I stuck my nose into their situation and asked them, didn't they understand the stupidity of what they were doing? And they sort of looked at me and said, look, we're not going to stay in the house. I said, well, look, be smart. Why are you going to play 4-on-4 basketball when you can play a game of horse? Keep the social distance, be competitive, be outside, but not take the risk of taking that virus back into your home with your parents, your grandparents, or your siblings.
Mm-hmm.
And so, look, there's a certain amount of personal responsibility that we have. And then there is, in terms of our public education strategy, we have to put the messages into those media that these communities listen to. So we have to step up the game on radio.
Good point.
You know, and so everybody has to be smart about this, but there's no mistaking that this disease has, in terms of fatalities, has disproportionately impacted the black community. A lot of it has to do with the density, not only of the neighborhoods, but their housing situation. It's a real challenge.
And socialization. I mean,
right.
and that they tend to spend more time together. In fact, this is one of the issues I brought up with the pastor back in my home community that continues to meet. And while I admire the fact that he buses in about 600 or 700 kids on a normal weekend from the inner city of Baton Rouge, mostly minority children, I'm excited that he does that in normal circumstances, but most of them live with their grandmother, mm-hmm. Who would be in this high-risk category, and you're taking a disease back or a virus back to them that could be deadly. And then who's going to take care of the kids?
You're absolutely right. And the left, and in large measure, the mainstream media, they try to turn everything into a combative situation of race. This is a public health concern. It is a concern that disproportionately impacts the African American and low-income communities for a number of reasons. And we have to specify what those reasons are and tailor our strategies to meet those challenges.
Right, and a lot of it is education, just being where they are listening and having the conversation. I mean, the same is true in the white community. Many people didn't believe this was an issue. And we're still educating them that it is a threat. Ken Blackwell, as always, great to talk with you. Thanks for stopping by.
Thank you, Tony. Bye-bye.
All right, Ken Blackwell, FRC Senior Fellow for Human Rights in Constitutional Governance. All right, popping up around the country after, a month, going into the second month of meeting restrictions, including church gatherings, some people are starting to see this as infringement on religious freedom. One of those fights broke out in Kansas. We're going to talk about that next. Don't go away.
Where can young men, husbands, and fathers find a model of real manhood, leadership, and strength in today's culture of gender confusion? This is Tony Perkins inviting you to join us at a Stand Courageous Men's Conference, led by men who are seasoned, compassionate men who understand the issues of the day and will help you understand your role as a defender, provider, instructor, battle buddy, and chaplain so that you can have the generational influence God has designed you to have. Learn more at StandCourageous.com.
Recently, a bill called the Fairness for All Act was introduced to the House of Representatives. In response, FRC has a new resource, the Unfairness of the Fairness for All Act. This act attempts to find a compromise between the First Amendment's protection of religious freedom and the demands of the LGBT community. But, unfortunately, it is a poorly drafted bill that would negatively impact religious freedom, true equality, and the privacy and safety of women. Learn more at frc.org/fairnessforall.
Did you know that Planned Parenthood is the primary supplier of abortions in the U.S.? According to Planned Parenthood's most recent annual report, it committed over 345,000 abortions in fiscal year 2018. That means, on average, Planned Parenthood aborted 1,768 babies every single day in 2018. And while Planned Parenthood's report revealed an increase in abortions committed, many of the services they provide, such as breast exams and cancer screenings, have drastically decreased. FRC recently released its 2020 edition of The Real Planned Parenthood, Leading the Culture of Death. In this resource, you will find many facts revealing the truth, that Planned Parenthood is in the business of abortion, not healthcare. To access this resource and to find out more, go to frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts. That's frc.org/Planned Parenthood Facts.
We can all benefit from a good lecture. They inform you and grow you. But sometimes you can't make it in person to every talk, seminar, or lecture you'd like to. Fortunately, Family Research Council now has a new podcast so you won't miss out. FRC's new weekly podcast called Lecture Me was created to help inform and equip listeners on the biggest issues affecting our culture today. Each episode presents a lecture selected from the archives of the FRC Speaker Series. Our podcast features today's top thinkers who address important issues like religious liberty, life, marriage, family, sexuality, public policy, and the culture, all from a biblical worldview. Make sure to stay tuned after each lecture to hear FRC's thoughts on the content as they further discuss the topic at hand. The Lecture Me podcast is available wherever podcasts are found, or visit frc.org/podcasts.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, the website tonyperkins.com. All right, with restrictions on public gatherings, including churches, going into the second month in many parts of the country, opposition is building, especially in jurisdictions where overzealous officials are targeting churches with nonsensical restrictions. In fact, it just got off the printer in Mississippi last night. Greenville, Mississippi. And I haven't dug down on this, just looking at the article where police wrote, people who came to the church for a drive-in parking lot service. They're in their cars, windows rolled up, listening to the pastor on the radio. They gave each one of them a $500 ticket. That, my friends, is wrong. And that's what has people incensed. And if government officials want churches and others to work with them, they have to be realistic. And following the CDC guidelines is one thing. And I'm all for that, and you've heard me say that. But when people are trying to follow it and you have overzealous officials doing things like this, that's what you call tyranny. Well, yesterday in Kansas, legislators overturned an order from Governor Laura Kelly that criminalized church gatherings. Joining me to talk about this is Kansas State Representative Susan Humphreys. Susan, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you. Good to be with you, Tony.
Now, the executive order is a little bit nebulous. I couldn't really determine what all was included in it. It just said church gathering, so I don't know if it included these drive-in services as well. But the issue, and of course the attorney general there in Kansas also weighed in on this, was that it was criminalizing this activity, which was found to be in contradiction to the state's constitution. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. It was an executive order that basically took an exemption away from religious gatherings. Previous to yesterday, they could meet, but after yesterday, it did criminalize them, which is in direct conflict with our Kansas Constitution and also our state religious freedom law. And the Attorney General issued an opinion that said criminalizing participation is absolutely, it's over the top. It's too much. And so our legislative leadership voted to revoke or veto that executive order. And as of today, Tony, just as of an hour ago, the governor has now filed suit against that executive leadership group, saying that they can't revoke her order. So we have a hot mess going on here in Kansas about this. Of course, we think that church worshipers and pastors should plan creative events on Easter that do not include people getting together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, do what you can. Let's celebrate Jesus. But we need to keep that social distancing. We need to be able to be creative in how we worship, and we need to follow those guidelines, the social distancing. But we don't need to make it criminal.
Yeah, I mean, so you're in agreement. We're in agreement that, you know, the CDC, the medical experts have said that, look, let's for this limited time period, no more than 10 people gathering together. We support that. I've been supporting that on the program. But when mm-hmm. people, when churches get creative in how they can minister and still stay involved in the community and in the lives of their parishioners, but then you have the elected officials, and I said limited, it's limited, but kind of moving the goalposts, saying, oh, wait a minute, you can't do that. After they were going through the process, that happened in California yesterday. Now they have since reversed themselves, saying you can't do drive-in services where people are confined within their cars. That becomes, in my view, and I think the view of many, an infringement upon religious freedom.
Yes. And to be clear, the governor did not say that you couldn't do online services or you couldn't even do drive-by. But she said you can't gather. If you do, it's criminal. But there are also exemptions for libraries, bars, restaurants, airports, all kinds of exemptions. But she took that exemption away from religious gatherings yesterday.
Which is one of the issues that makes it problematic, because it has to be uniformly applied to all yes. gatherings, or it is then seen as an infringement upon the first freedom.
Yes, exactly.
Well, Susan, I am grateful for legislators and other elected officials like you that are willing to be reasonable, agreed that CDC guidelines are good, and we need to do our part to keep our neighbors and our community safe, but at the same time, we have to safeguard those fundamental freedoms, which many have fought and died for, and we're not going to lose it, virus or not. We're not going to give up those freedoms.
Absolutely. Health and safety of utmost importance, but we also need to be vigilant to watch our constitutional rights. Thank you,
All right.
Tony.
All right, Susan Humphreys, thanks so much for joining us, and keep up the good work there in the state of Kansas.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you.
All right. Kansas State Representative Susan Humphreys. It's look, reasonable. We need to follow the guidelines. But when you have jurisdictions like this, I'm really shocked this is coming out of Mississippi. In fact, on my way to the studio, I got a call from the office of an elected official in the state of Kentucky, where something similar is happening. Because a lot of churches, in fact, many of them following our encouragement, are doing drive-in services, especially this weekend, for Resurrection Sunday. In fact, as I have said, I'm helping facilitate one here in my home community, and we're expecting several hundred people come and be a part of that. They'll be in their car, keeping their distance. The windows will be up. They'll be listening on FM radio station. Nothing wrong with that. No different than driving down the street. Why would officials target individuals sitting in their car at a church, ticketing them $500? Overzealous, and this is where you begin to lose the support of the people. I mean, this is the dangerous point. When you start to do stuff like that, voluntary compliance begins to fall away. Because people then begin to see that this is about something more than public safety and health, and that you have elected officials that have an agenda. And I'm telling you, as I said before, we will defend the first freedom. We'll defend the community. And I'm completely supportive of the president's or the CDC's guidelines, strictly adhering to them. Even last week, my daughter got married. We had basically 10 people for the wedding. We'll abide by those. But I will not allow these overzealous, I'm being cautious what I say, elected officials to trample upon our first freedom. Joining me now to talk more about this, Travis Weber, Vice President of Policy here at the Family Research Council. Travis, these things are starting to pop up in parts of the country, as I said, going into the second month of these meeting restrictions. You know, Washington State is one of those states where they have gone, I think, across the line. They've crossed the line in terms of religious liberty. So it's becoming a little more frequent, is it not?
It is, Tony. I think we're looking at more of a case of whack-a-mole right now in these situations in which states, as you're mentioning, are approaching this with a lack of caution. Very dangerous because, you know, what you were talking about earlier, it gets at the issue of trust between citizens and the government. We always need to be vigilant. But when citizens see the government acting properly to protect constitutional rights and protect religious freedom, we think of the Texas Attorney General's guidance on religious freedom indicates, hey, we're aware of religious freedom, even while we're trying to guard against public safety. That sends a signal that can let people work with the government. But when you start to see, as you're mentioning, government overreach, it breaks that down, breaks down that trust, erodes it. Washington State is an example of this. They're classifying essential businesses to include marijuana dispensaries. Yet their order is so narrowly drawn, or so broad, and so careless when it comes to religion that perhaps it might even prevent two priests in private celebrating a mass and then broadcasting it, live streaming it. We don't know this, but we're looking at the order, and it could be that bad. You know, and there's other situations we've been talking about, Kansas and elsewhere, where these people are grappling through these things. And then you have, but without good guidance, you have officers going out, issuing citations, putting people, you know, accusing people, charging them with violating the law. It starts to really erode that trust. So we're seeing, more cases of this pop up, and we're really trying to get a handle on it, starting to categorize the way the states are looking at these things. Hope to have more information for the public soon in terms of resource to be able to understand what's happening and mm-hmm. then determine, hey, this violates religious freedom or it doesn't. We want to have a clear line and a model position for governments to be able to take on this.
You know, it's a great lesson in how a republic works, in that, you know, we voluntarily submit ourselves to the Constitution. The Constitution is the governing document. That's the agreement by which we agree to be governed. And we have enumerated rights in there that are anticipated. It's anticipated, fully expected, that the government will protect those rights. It's not rights that the government gives us. It's rights that we recognize that come from God that will be protected by the government. And so when they trample upon that, that's where the agreement begins to break down, and it can really get into a tailspin very quickly. And so it's important that government officials exercise restraint. It's important that citizens exercise restraint, and that we seek to do, you know, our part in a republic as ours, a constitutional republic, and we each, you know, agree to live by the terms of that agreement. And we understand, we've talked about here on this program, that there are limitations. Sometimes they have to be put in place for emergencies. But they have to be reasonable. They have to be limited. And they have to be applied universally. And that's when that doesn't happen, that's where you begin to have this breach, as you said, breach of trust, that can really, really cause the whole thing just to come apart. I want to mention this, Travis, before we run out of time. We talked about this yesterday in San Bernardino, California. The county there, late Tuesday night, putting out an order that said you couldn't meet with drive-in cars, drive-in services where cars couldn't come into the parking lot. You couldn't drive through and get, you know, Easter eggs or, prayer. And that now has been rescinded. I was just mentioned it briefly earlier with Pastor Jack Hibbs, but I had talked to him about it yesterday morning, and he actually called the county executive there and found out that they had prematurely released that statement. And after a conversation, they walked that back. They did acknowledge that they had gotten a lot of pushback. So, folks, I would certainly encourage you, if you live in one of these jurisdictions like Greenville, Mississippi, where I know our signal covers this area, I would certainly encourage you to call the mayor there in Greenville, Mississippi. Maybe I'll get the number before we get off the air here. But, Travis, what are some of those other jurisdictions where people can reach out and have conversations with their elected officials?
Yeah, Tony, I think this is a great lesson. Ill-conceived press release was issued. Pastor Jack inquired, and the issue, appears resolved. So we need to remain vigilant. I would say everywhere across the country, when there's a concern about impact, unnecessary, unconstitutional impact on worship and religious exercise, folks should inquire with the relevant authorities there and clarify what the stance is. And then if there's a problem, alert us. We'll help alert legal counsel to get involved and make sure that these issues are corrected. I mentioned Washington State. We're seeing a lot of places that have not designated religious services or clergy as essential yet, which is a good sign if they do. So if they haven't done that, Washington State hasn't done that, and others, it puts us all in a position of greater alarm. We're still kind of classifying due to a lot of these differences here, but I would say across the board, especially where they have not been designated as essential, religious services essential, folks need to be aware of what's happening, and even where they have. In Florida, we had issues popping up there and elsewhere, even though the government there eventually took steps to clarify along the lines that I'm stating. So, Tony, I would say everywhere we all need to be participate in this right now, because the story is my colleagues Kana Gonzalez and David Clausen have a blog just up now about how many churches, overwhelmingly number of churches, that participating and working with, cooperating with the government's efforts here to deal with this crisis, the CDC guidelines, other reasonable government measures, you mentioned those. There are a infinitesimally small number of churches that are not cooperating. And this is important to understand. Right now, we're in a good spot, but we need to keep the ball moving ahead in terms of government authorities respecting religious freedom to remain in the spot that we're in now.
Absolutely. And by the way, folks, I do have the number for Mayor Simmons in Greenville, Mississippi. His number is 662-378-1501. That's 662-378-1501. Mayor Simmons is the one that ordered churchgoers that were in their cars last night to get $500 tickets for meeting. 662-378-1501 for those of you who live in the state of Mississippi. Travis, thanks so much for joining us. Look forward to those resources coming out early next week.
Thanks, Tony.
And folks, thank you for joining us. And I certainly do encourage you to be in prayer for our nation's situation. Pray for our leaders. Pray for those, all of them, that they would make wise decisions and that we would make wise decisions as well. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is brought to you by Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. Portions of the show discussing candidates are brought to you by Family Research Council Action. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.